Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast, your go-to destination for exhilarating journeys through the triumphs and challenges of extraordinary women, shaping the world in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I am your host, Kelly, and together we will explore the stories of visionary tech CEOs, groundbreaking scientists, and insightful recruiters, and many more women, making this podcast a dynamic showcase of global talent. Join me as we unravel the stories behind their success, offering a first-hand account of their experiences and invaluable advice at every stage of their remarkable career. Get ready for a thrilling exploration of innovation, resilience, and empowerment as we amplify the voices of trailblazing individuals, breaking barriers and building a future where brilliance knows no boundaries. This is the Women in STEM podcast, where inspiration and knowledge collide to propel us forward towards limitless possibilities. Thank you so much for joining us on the Women in STEM podcast. Can you please tell us a bit more about yourself and your background in STEM?
Hi there. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to join you today. My name is Dr. Mikhaila Musilova. I'm an astrobiologist and a Marsonaut, as a lot of people like to call me. And what that means is, as an astrobiologist, I'm searching for life in space, but I do it by researching life in extreme environments here on Earth to understand what the limits of life are and to help us search for areas, for example, on Mars, where we could find similar extreme life forms. And as a Marsonaut, I'm actually an analog astronaut, and I have been the commander of over 30 simulated missions to the Moon and Mars, and I have organized over 40 such missions. So I have, in a way, quote unquote, lived on other planets for over a year by doing this type of research.
Wow, what an introduction. That is so cool.
Thank
can
you.
Please elaborate as to how you got to this point in your career. Like, what did you study? Like, how did you end up where you are now?
Oh, it's a long story, but it all started with a childhood dream. I was just really fascinated by space and the possibility of there being aliens out there, that as an 8-year-old, I knew that that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, but I wasn't really sure how to do that. And a couple of years later, I had the opportunity of meeting the first and so far only Slovak astronaut, Ivan Belam. And during this meeting, I realized, oh, that would be the perfect job, is to go to space and do my research there, look for aliens directly in space. And so since that age, I had been dreaming of becoming an astronaut and being an astrobiologist. But as someone from a country that doesn't have much access to space, it was always a bit of an impossible dream. And I was discouraged many times along the way because, for example, my family couldn't financially support my studies. And I end up having to do basically everything myself. So from age 15, I had multiple jobs during my high school years and later at university in order to be able to finance my studies. I try to get the best possible grades to get every scholarship I could apply for. Also to help with financing of my studies. I also got help through charities and grants and you name it. And it paid off because I was able to get into universities like University College London. In my second year, I was selected on a scholarship to go to the American University Caltech, also on a huge scholarship, which the only way I would have been able to go to that university. And it was through these experiences, I was able to build a path towards astrobiology, because at the time, you couldn't study astrobiology as a subject at university. And so I decided to study planetary science, so a combination of geology and astrophysics. And then when I got to Caltech in the US, I was able to add biology, microbiology, environmental science, and other subjects to the mix, and that way kind of get closer to my astrobiology dreams. And while I was at Caltech, I found out that there was a researcher doing astrobiology research at the nearby NASA JPL labs. And I just really wanted to find a way to be able to work for NASA on exactly this type of research that I found so fascinating. And so I contacted the researcher and asked them if there's a way we could work together. And he really liked all my different ideas and loved my enthusiasm. But he said, oh, unfortunately, international students can't work for NASA. It was just a visa-related rule at the time. But I didn't let myself be discouraged. And I asked him, you know, if there's some other way we could maybe apply for a grant together or work together in some other shape or form. And eventually we were able to find a grant that allowed me to work at NASA as a visiting researcher. And that way, as a 21-year-old, I, in a great part, fulfilled one of my childhood dreams. And I was able to work directly in astrobiology at NASA. But for visa reasons, I had to return to Europe afterwards. And I continued by studying life in extreme environments to see if we could find other extreme life forms beyond our planet, which is what my work at NASA was focused on. And that's what led me on lots of expeditions to extreme places like Greenland, Svalbard. I even was on a research grant in Japan for some time. And it was during this time when I was doing research around the world that the first British crew to go on a simulated Mars mission was to be selected. And even though I'm not British myself, because I was doing my PhD in the UK, I was able to apply as part of the selection process, and I was selected and three of my research projects to take part in this simulated mission. And that's the first time I got to experience living and working on Mars, quote unquote. And that really felt like living my dream. And then afterwards, since this mission went so well, I got more offers to become the commander of simulated Martian missions. So I returned and yeah, fast forward a few years and I have been the commander, I think, of the most missions on Earth so far that were simulating life on the Moon and Mars. And then I'll just mention briefly that in the middle of all of that, I also returned back home to my home country, Slovakia. Because our space sector wasn't moving forward very much. And I was hoping that maybe with my experiences at NASA and the simulated missions, I might be able to help boost things forward a little bit. And while my efforts did pay off to some degree, we were a group of people mostly under the age of 30 that helped build the first Slovak satellite. This satellite really opened the doors to a number of researchers and companies to be involved in the space sector. It also helped convince the government to invest in the space sector and to start becoming part of the European Space Agency. So, since those times, we have become an associate member state of ESA, which means that, for example, Slovakians could even apply to be astronauts in a future round of the European Space Agency selection process. We also now have over 40 space companies in Slovakia, which all started very much with this one project that I was involved with of the first Slovak satellite. And I started teaching astrobiology in Slovakia for the first time. So there was a lot of good stuff that happened, but unfortunately, I also faced a very negative backlash as a young woman trying to make big changes in my country. Some older male professors weren't too happy with what I was doing, or that I guess it was so popular that they started to do a lot of very mean things to me, including they tried to blackmail me, they spread lies about me in the media that I never worked for NASA and all sorts of things like that. So I've also seen kind of that dark side of trying to make changes in a world where I guess some people are just not prepared for that. But in the middle of all that, I was offered position to be part of a NASA simulated mission to Mars. And later I got offered the position of becoming the director of the High Seas Facility in Hawaii, where I organized over 40 simulated missions to the Moon and Mars. So it all worked out in the end. And now recently I've been working on my very own project called Astro Seven Summits. And the goal of this project is to climb the tallest mountain on each continent while performing scientific research, educational outreach activities, and We started off with my team on Kilimanjaro, and we're working our way up all the way to Everest, which we're planning on climbing next year. So that's the super brief way I could try and share my story with you.
Wow, you have achieved so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations. I'm really blown away
You
by your
very much.
accomplishments and achievements.
Thank
And
you.
I have had a lot of exposure to women who have done like PhDs and who are currently doing their PhD. And so I have heard similar experiences to what you've spoken about. But I was curious to know, what type of changes and developments have you seen specifically within the women in science space from when you first started to now? And what type of changes do you think that we should be pushing more forward to?
Luckily, things have been getting better. I'm happy to say that, though very slowly. When I first started off, I was very much one of few women studying or working in the space sector, or even in a lot of STEM subjects. And it was definitely harder, I think, for all of us, because not only, we didn't have many peers that we could work with, but most importantly, many times the teachers or supervisors, they didn't take us as seriously as they did our male colleagues. And there was the pressure for us to work harder than our male colleagues just to be taken seriously. So I always had to be top of my class, and not only to get scholarships and things like that that I needed to fund my studies, but also just to be acknowledged and for my work to be judged more fairly than it would have been without me putting in more effort than my male peers. And I really hope that that's changing now, where women don't have to work extra hard just to be, taken seriously and considered as serious scientists or students, even for that matter. But the only places I've really seen change is when women and men work together to make these changes in a community. Because when it was just women, they were too few to be able to make a big change, or they were just constantly fighting through obstacles and problems, which in many cases would actually just make the women want to give up or not have to pursue trying to work in toxic environments. And I myself had to give up on several job opportunities, because though the work I was doing was great and fulfilling in many ways, I knew for a fact, in several cases, that I was paid, for example, only a third of what a male colleague was being paid, and he was doing much less work than I was being than the work that I was doing. And I was facing just really horrible toxic conditions. So many times we are not able to make the changes we hope for, and we just have to step away for our own mental and just physical health. However, in environments where men and women work together to make changes for the better, to make the conditions less toxic, to try and achieve more fair pay, and just in general, to make things be more equal, whether it's men or women or people of different minorities, only then the changes were substantial. And just to give you an example, I've been teaching at the International Space University the last few years. And when I first started teaching there, I remember they were really happy that, oh, we have 30% of our students are women, and that was like a huge milestone that we broke through. And nowadays we're at about 50% of the students. Sometimes actually more students are female than they're male. And that has been a huge change that was brought upon because a lot of the professors and people involved in running of the university were both men and women, and both had a goal of making the environment better for students, no matter their gender or where they come from.
So you mentioned a large part of the success of your career was due to being able to get scholarship and funding. Where would you recommend people look for that if they're wanting to have a similar career to you?
I mean, things have changed a lot over the years. When I started, I didn't even have a proper computer and searching for things online was very difficult. So I would just go to the library at my university to look for resources. And most importantly, I spoke to people. I spoke to my professors and other people at university or people at conferences and events that I met them there. And I just asked for help and advice. And in that respect, that hasn't changed over the years. And I highly recommend talking to people because, yes, you can find a lot of resources online. And nowadays, it's so much easier to find information about scholarships and grants and all that, which I hope will make life so much better for people like me trying to find funding and opportunities. But even this day and age, it's still, it might be even better and easier to ask for help from people that are either well connected or might have the right information, which can be people's professors, people at the university, at conferences they go to, other peers that receive different types of scholarships. It's just simply because there's so much information out there on the internet, it might be actually hard to find what you're looking for, and people who you know may actually have really good advice. And even me, this day and age, I do look for all sorts of grant opportunities online to fund my research and educational projects. But many times it's a friend who, oh, I read about this grant possibility or this scholarship, you should apply for it. They just send me a link, and that's how I find out about something great that sometimes helps me with funding. So definitely don't hesitate to ask around, ask for help. That's perfectly fine and very important to help you in your career or your studies or whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. And then just keep searching online for all sorts of resources. There's lots of stuff out there, so it's important to choose the right keywords and narrow down your search to things that are directly related to whatever it is you're trying to pursue.
And with regards to like the communities you've been a part of, are there any that you can be able to kind of highlight and go into a bit more details of what communities that you've been a part of that people might also want to consider joining?
Oh, I've been part of many communities, so let's see where to start. But so, for example, in the space sector, it always depends on what people are looking for. But in the space sector, there are communities kind of that are more specifically focused on an area of the space sector you might be interested in. So, for example, if you're interested in simulated space missions like the ones I've been running, there is now an analog astronaut community that organizes a conference every year and have interesting resources online. Then, in terms of astrobiology, there's a whole astrobiology network. One is focused on communities in Europe, but then there's other ones in the US and international ones. There's also the International Space University, where I teach. They have a network all around the world. They run various programs, for example, a summer space studies program. It does cost a lot to be part of this program, but they do offer different types of scholarships for people from around the world. And once you are able to get into these educational programs, they have a great networking system and really help people with getting internships and job opportunities. So that's why they're also kind of nicknamed the space mafia, quote unquote, because they're so well connected. So yeah, it really depends on what you're looking for. Recently, I became part of the Homeward Bound program, which is a program for women and non-binary people around the world to help empower us, create a helpful network that can help women and girls succeed in STEM areas, but also to have influence on policy making, especially with regards to climate change, for example. So there's a lot of different types of networks around the world. It really depends on what you're interested, what you want to get into. But I highly recommend being part of them because it's just so wonderful to have a support network of people that can help you, you can exchange information with, and these people eventually can become your colleagues or even partners at work, and then you're able to achieve all sorts of amazing things together.
And with regards to like NASA, and getting an opportunity to work there, I know that it's extremely competitive. I remember speaking to somebody at a science fair, and she mentioned that they received something like 18,000 applicants for an astronaut role, for the company, and they had to sift through all those applications to try to find the top people. So, in such a competitive space of, especially once you start talking about space, there's a large amount of people that want to get into it. What can somebody do to make themselves stand out from the comp from their competition or from other candidates?
Yeah, it's definitely very competitive in the space sector, and especially then, yeah, if you go into wanting to become an astronaut, and that's a whole other story. But what I would recommend to anyone, whether it's in the space sector or nowadays, I feel like this is something relevant wherever you go, is it's important to have things on your CV or in your experiences that are different than just your studies. In the past, a lot of people would just try and have good grades at school and be the best students, perhaps, and that's how they would get scholarships and opportunities. But nowadays, because of the high competition, but also because in the space sector and in similar environments, we're looking for people that are not only, really talented at being engineers, scientists, and so on, but also people that can work well with teams, especially in diverse teams of people from around the world. So that's why it's important to have experiences outside of school as part of your CV or your track record that you're applying to these different things with. And that's why I recommend joining different types of projects that are either not directly involved with your school, but something you would do outside of school. I know there's all sorts of competitions, national, international, people can sign up for. I also, growing up, and this is actually something I was also going to mention earlier as a recommendation. I created a lot of projects myself. And so many times you might not be able to find exactly what you're looking for, what you're interested in. So don't hesitate to actually be able to just create something of your own. And, I have some examples here. For example, when I started, astrobiology wasn't a subject. You couldn't study that at school. So I created my own path towards astrobiology and eventually was able to work in research directly related to that. Then in Slovakia, there weren't many opportunities for doing space things, and I ended up bringing them there to my country. Now I created this Astro 7 Summits project myself, and though the hard part about the project is I always have to look for funding to be able to just keep it going or to be able to continue with it and to publish different documentaries that I'm filming during my expeditions. It is extremely fulfilling to be able to do something that you truly love and are passionate about, but it takes, yeah, the extra effort of having to get the funding for it, for example. So all that to say, don't hesitate to create your own opportunities. Maybe there isn't exactly a project around that you find particularly fulfilling. Well, create your own project and get together with your peers or apply for grants or scholarships to fund this project. And it's these types of initiatives where you go out of your typical environment of a school or job and do something extra. That's what will stand out on a CV, especially if it involves teamwork. Ideally, working with diverse teams, international teams, and ideally in environments where you can mix different disciplines. So, something that's international and interdisciplinary, that's also going to be a big highlight. So, all that to say, that's really ways to stand out is to show initiative, show interest beyond just your school or work, and to be a good team member by working in diverse teams.
You've been recognized for various awards, and you've also been featured in the Forbes Slovakia. How do you manage balancing being a scientist, a speaker, an author, and you've From what you've explained earlier on, you've had so many changes to like the places that you've worked and the countries. So do you have any advice on how you like manage to balance all of these different aspects?
Oh, thank you for your kind words. It's nowadays I would say it's second nature really to just be multitasking all the time, but I think it just started off with having passion for something, being very curious as a scientist. I think that's very important for us to just try to continuously be curious, wonder about the world, how things work, and want to keep on learning, and also acknowledge that we still have a lot of work to do on ourselves all the time, but just take it one step at a time. So I think from the start, I just was really hoping to reach my goals, at least to some degree, of studying astrobiology. And I'm still trying my best to be able to become an astronaut one day, even though my nationality is still, unfortunately, my main barrier for that's keeping me from being able to achieve this. And at first, yeah, my drive was the passion and curiosity. But then in my 20s, when I saw the impact of my work, especially that I was inspiring other young people to pursue their dream despite obstacles, or that people were more interested in different scientific subjects after I tried to explain those topics to them in an understandable way. I saw that what I do is meaningful and it has an impact on other people. And that then motivated me to continue with my work, but also to add science communication as part of my work. And that has been a huge part of what I do for about 15 years now. And though it takes up a lot of time, especially in terms of social media and things like that, I see how many people it helps on a daily basis, and that is my main motivation, what keeps me going. And that eventually, yeah, led to me doing a lot of the science communication work, writing books, and I actually have my own kind of somewhat autobiography here with me. It's called A Woman from Mars. It's in Slovakian. I'm working on the English version nowadays. But yeah, that I would say is the motivation that helps me get through difficult times, either the fact that I know my work has positive impact on other people, and that's what helps me power through even the difficult days. But also I keep reminding myself, why did I start doing this in the first place? And it's something that I love, and that's why it's so rewarding. And in terms of just managing all of this, time management is something I learned to work with well, even as a teenager. And I would say it's definitely a key to my success to be able to manage to do a lot of different things in short periods of time, work with a lot of different people around the world. And it really is just practice makes perfect sort of thing, where there's a will, there's a way.
Definitely. And you mentioned about your book, and I'm sure that you said that you're currently translating your book into English, but I was wondering if you would be able to share any memorable moments or encounters that you've had whilst working for NASA or ESA or any other organization.
So something that I mentioned in the book, so the book is called A Woman from Mars, and it's called that because that became my nickname in my home country, Slovakia. I was doing so much outreach and educational work, and usually related to Mars and space missions, that when people would recognize me on the street, they'll be like, "Oh, you're the woman from Mars." And then I was like, "Oh, that's actually quite a fun nickname. Let me stick to that." And so I just called my book that. And it'll probably be called that in English as well when I'm finished. I'm basically not just translating, I'm actually rewriting it into English because I want it to be accessible to international audiences. So I'm kind of adjusting it for that reason. Yeah, in terms of some memorable moments, well, there were quite a few. For example, when I worked at NASA at the time, they were preparing the Curiosity rover to send it to Mars, and it landed there, I think, in 2012. But for me, it was just amazing to be able to work in this facility that I had been dreaming about since I was a kid. And then at 21 years old, I was already working there, and I would pass by this rover that was going to Mars every day. I could just look through the windows in the clean room And my work was directly related to curiosity as well. So it was very much like living a dream, but at the same time, I lived in this like crazy irony, or how to put it. Basically, at the time when I was working at NASA, their policy was to only pay stipends like the one I was on every 3 months. But at that point, I had been living in the US for a few months. And while the scholarship I had to go to Caltech covered my tuition fees for the university, I still had to pay for the housing and the food and all that. And Caltech is located in Pasadena in Los Angeles, a very expensive part of the US. And let's just say, no matter how much I tried, I was running out of money because I had saved up money through my scholarships and everything, but everything was just so expensive that even like literally I was fasting a lot of the time just to save money on food. And I became the skinniest version of me, I think, ever while being at Caltech. I would show up to different events just for the food, in all honesty, just because I was so hungry all the time. And even despite these efforts, I just couldn't save enough money to pay the rent. And then I was like, oh, great, I got a job at NASA that will help me pay for rent and things like that. But because they only paid every 3 months, there was a period of time for a couple of months where I didn't have enough money to pay the rent. And so I was couch surfing. I was basically a homeless person in Los Angeles, sleeping on strangers' sofas, hoping that nothing bad would happen to me. And then I would get up in the morning and I would go to work at NASA. And it was just kind of the ultimate irony of my existence at the time. But fortunately, I was able to stay with people that, were good people that didn't take advantage of me in any way. And I survived through a couple of tough months until I was in a better place and was got my payment from NASA. And then things got much better. But yeah, those are just some examples of some of the things I went through where, because the financial situation was tough, yeah, I was basically homeless while working at NASA, and I went through a lot of similar experiences later in life. But at least like a cherry on top of the cake, or like a bonus at the end of my stay at NASA, I was able to put my signature into the rover Curiosity, which is now on Mars. So that was always something I think back to fondly.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing that. That is definitely an ultimate irony because I'm sure a lot of people back home thought that now you're working for NASA, you've made it, you know?
Exactly.
I wanted to switch gears into talking a bit about so you've mentioned about like your space interest and your space experience, but you've also mentioned about your love of traveling and the fact that you've been to some of the world's tallest mountains. But I wanted to talk about your Antarctica expedition, and I wanted to know how did you get involved and what motivated you?
Thank you for asking. I always was passionate about Antarctica, and I think it started when I was a teenager. That's when I first really heard talks about climate change and how our world is changing and how we're not doing enough to stop it from changing for the worst. So I remember already as a teenager, I was trying to convince my family to recycle, and I made several projects at school talking about the importance of recycling and unplugging devices when we're not using them, so we're not wasting energy and things like that. And Antarctica kind of popped on my radar around that time, just realized what an amazing place it is, but also very fragile, and it will have a big impact on our planet once it starts melting a lot due to climate change. And so by the time I got to university when I was about 18 years old, I knew I wanted to find a way to do research related to Antarctica. And actually that very year, my first year at university, there was a competition in the UK to join an Antarctic expedition. And I was among the finalists selected for that expedition, but one of my professors did not want me to join because I would miss some of his classes. And it was just so heartbreaking for me at the time because I thought, wow, I was able to get selected this far and it's a perfect opportunity for me to go there and start contributing to research related to Antarctica. And then I was prevented from doing so for what I didn't consider the best reasons. You know, I could have caught up on those classes another time. It wouldn't have been the end of the world. And that kind of started this unfortunate journey for me over the last 17 years or so, where I would find a great opportunity to go to Antarctica. Even during my PhD, I found a couple of such possibilities. And then usually an older male professor or supervisor stopped me from going and even, you know, took my place twice. One person took my place twice. And so it took 12 attempts for me to finally be able to go to Antarctica last year. And when it worked out, that was a very positive, I guess, irony or something in the world where when I was finally able to go to Antarctica, it was with a group of female and non-binary leaders from around the world through the Homeward Bound program. So I'm glad that it worked out that way. And I was selected for this expedition back in 2020, I think. They had a selection process going on around the world, and I'm very grateful that I was selected as one of approximately 100 women worldwide to take part in this program. And because of the pandemic, it all took a little bit longer, but eventually, in November of last year, we were able to go to Antarctica.
And what were the challenges that you encountered during your voyage, and how was it to be able to work with your fellow participants of the Antarctica expedition?
I would say one of the biggest challenges for me was that we went there on a boat. And I was just feeling motion sick for a lot of it because we encountered some very tall waves. I don't remember exactly, but I think they were like 8 meters tall, which meant like the entire boat was rocking like crazy. And I was trying to sleep because I wasn't feeling too well. And it felt like I was on a roller coaster while lying in bed. And it was just a nightmare. And that went on for like 3 days. So it was very hard to be able to eat any food. Or just function properly during those 3 days. But fortunately, once we arrived in Antarctica, things got so much better. And I think just the joy, the euphoria of finally being there after so many years of effort just made all the bad stuff go away. And so we journeyed on a big ship that got us to Antarctica. But once we were in Antarctica, we moved around on these small kind of inflatable boats called Zodiacs, which I think would fit maybe 10, 12 people or so. And then we would go on these small boats to actually land on the Antarctic Peninsula or the islands that surround it. And just being there and experiencing this place I had been dreaming about for so long, was just incredible for me. And I just felt like I was living my dream every single day that we were there. And everyone on that ship was just also, you know, incredible. They were very inspiring, wonderful people to work with. And so just being together and working on things that we're all passionate about just made this journey even better than it already was, despite the motion sickness.
So, with regards to the expedition, you mentioned about some of the trials and tribulations that you had with the boat and getting there. But what were some of your main takeaways, and what is the overall message that you would like to convey to the public?
I think for me, it was really powerful to be able to be in Antarctica myself and to see the effects of climate change with my very own eyes. Because I've been talking about this for decades now, and it's something very close to my heart. But then, you know, to be able to really kind of experience it in person in a place that's very important to me just really hammered in home the message that I want to share with others about, you know, how important it is for each and every one of us to realize that we have the power to help change this planet for the better. And all it takes is to be more careful with how we manage our things. And that means perhaps consuming less, so buying less things, trying to use what we have to the maximum and not having lots and lots of items that we don't even use that much and then we throw away, and that accumulates in terms of having lots of trash rubbish around the world accumulating in great amounts, which then damages our natural environment. So it's even little things like that, just being aware of the fact that we really don't need that many things for happiness. And what we do have, let's try and use it to the maximum. And before we just throw it out, see if we can recycle it or upcycle it in some way. That already can have a massive effect on our environment. Then, when we're out in the nature, not to just throw things out, leave it on the ground, but collect everything after ourselves to basically leave no trace or as little trace as we can. And things like, recycling, better energy, water management, all those things, they add up. And when each of us, takes care to be more, how to put this, to care more about the environment and do at least a little bit of something that can help it, it will add up. And around the world, it can help change this planet for the better. But if we don't do it, the effects on our planet and on our everyday lives and that of future generations will be huge. And so for me, I already knew this, but being there, it really kind of reinforced the work I want to do on this planet to help share these messages and encourage people to, think more about the impact they can have on this planet. And it can be good. I just have to, on purpose, choose to do things a certain way. So that they accumulate in a good way and not in a negative way.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And finally, what are your hopes and aspirations for the future? And how best can people get in contact with you?
Thank you for asking. Now I'm mostly working on my Astro 7 Summits project because it encompasses all the different things I'm passionate about, both space and looking for extreme life forms, aliens potentially, but also climate change. During each expedition, we're looking at how the environment of our where the expedition takes place is changing, and I'm trying to alert people to that, and again to what everyone can do to have a positive impact on this planet. I continue to do my science and educational work during these expeditions and beyond. So I give a lot of presentations around the world on a regular basis and share my documentary films. So I plan on working on that, and I hope to spread the word about what I do and how, we can all have a positive impact on this planet through continuing these types of projects. And who knows where my path will lead to, but hopefully it might even lead to me going to space finally, which is something I've been working on my whole life and still trying to find a way to do it, because I hope that if I'm able to succeed, it can open doors to so many other people who are perhaps from countries, communities that don't have access to space or for whom it's difficult to be able to do the work they love doing just because of where they were born or what gender they are and so on. So I plan on continuing to work with that and really hope that I can make some good changes in this world. And if people are interested in the work I do or would like to get in touch or involved, you can find me on social media as Astro underscore Michaela or Dr. Michaela Muslova on my Facebook page. And I also have some fundraising information there if you would like to support my work in any way. Thank you very much.
Thank you to the amazing guest host speaker, and thank you for listening to this episode. Please make sure to follow the podcast and to follow me on social media at Kelly underscore engineer on Twitter or Instagram. As well as please make sure to check out our new YouTube channel called Women in STEM Podcast to see our latest episodes visually. Until next time, bye!